This is Sarah Seven, and you are listening to Tornado Radio, where we're all safe and warm in the eye of the Central Texas music storm.
Got another fun one for you, dear listeners. Instead of focusing on the established acts, people who are used to being in the spotlight, I thought it might be fun to give some attention to some of the people who are in the background, though some of them might actually be up and coming. But no matter what, they're part of what makes a thriving music scene work. I had in mind two bass players and a drummer, and just for kicks, I thought I would talk with them about things other than music, such as their day jobs. But one of the guys had to work, and the other one is looking for a job. But I was able to get a hold of my friend Curtis Brayfield, whom I met years ago at an open mic that no longer exists and was held in an establishment that is no longer in business. But since then, Curtis has played bass for Mo Blues, another band of gypsies, Bad Mojo, and has sat in for the likes of Mad Stone and John Austin. And all the while, Curtis has been working on other things besides the bass, such as the six-string guitar, slide guitar, and writing songs. And it has been known to happen that a guy who starts out as a player gets brave enough to step in front of a microphone, figures out how to sing, and eventually fronts his own band. But anyway, Curtis and I spent a little bit of time talking about jobs and songwriting, fitting music into life, and he shared one of his songs with me, even taught it to me. We recorded it, and I'll share that recording with y'all, though, be warned, it's rough. Neither of our guitars were in tune. But it was a fun time, and it could be the start of something really cool.
You've been a working musician, as in bands. Yeah. You've been in quite a few bands, but before we get into that, what is your current job? What are you doing for a living?
I work in a quarry. I blow shit up and drive Tonka toys.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a fun job.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Blew up them rocks real good. Yeah. But you've done other things before that.
I've had a ton of jobs.
Yeah.
Well, for 22 years, I served in the military. I did 18 in the Army and 4 in the Navy. I worked as a machinist for a couple of years. I worked as a plumber for in home remodeler and did building maintenance for a few years.
This is all before the Army / Navy, or
well, in between.
In between, and
some
yeah.
of the, you know, because I went in, said screw this, got out, kicked around for a while as a civilian, said what the hell am I doing here? I need to go back in. And you
weren't
know,
you in college at one point or other?
I was in college as well. I originally started going to college to get my pilot's license, and I realized I liked riding horses better than I liked flying planes. So I basically started going to college to be a cowboy.
And, educated cowboy.
Well,
that would make sense in Texas.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, my grandfather taught me how to ride when I was a kid. But he didn't, and I quickly learned that when I started going to college for this stuff. Because, you know, as a 12-year-old kid who weighs a buck nothing, there's no way I'm going to put a leg on a horse. Whereas now, I've trained horses.
Yeah.
Where I can just drop the reins and work them with just my legs. And while they may not be a cutting horse, they will at least listen to me, you know, listen to my leg commands.
See, a lot of people don't even necessarily know what this means. They're like, you just get on the horse and it goes, right? But
right.
No, there's a lot more to it.
There's a lot more to it. And I, as much as, you know, me and my grandfather did ride, in fact, there was one time where I actually helped corral a calf away from an opening in the gate, or an opening in this fence. At the place where he was boarding his horses. So I even did some cowboy stuff when I was a kid. But even then, there was so much that I didn't know about horses. And a lot of the stuff that I learned about horses kind of applies to people, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Make the right thing easy and the wrong thing hard.
Which kind of makes me think of your military career.
Well, I did artillery for half my career, and I did PSYOP for the other half. Psychological operations.
The right thing easy and the wrong thing hard.
I like to call it combat car salesman. We were just marketing ideas and behaviors as opposed to products. And the funny thing is, as much as, we were told you're not allowed to use PSYOP on Americans at all. I'm seeing it so much. If you don't get the jab, you can't go to the store. If that's not PSYOP.
Yeah, that was a little... Well, that's also a weird style of parenting, too, you know?
It is, but to be perfectly honest, I mean...
If you don't eat your meat, you don't get your pudding. How could you? Yeah.
But that's the thing, though, is that, to a certain extent, you have to do that. Both as a, as a parent, as a spouse, as somebody, you do have to use that kind of, as a dog owner, as a horse trainer and all that.
Or if you're a dog and you're a people owner.
if you do that in your life, it doesn't take away somebody's
free will,
but it's like Jesus said in the Bible, if you don't think about it, you won't do it, right? So, if you've already thought about sleeping with this woman, you've already committed adultery.
Yeah.
If you pray ceaselessly, you won't have any room in your life for even thinking about the bad thing, the wrong thing, let alone doing the wrong thing.
I'm still back on the dog, because I'm thinking our animals are probably psyoping us. They are.
Oh, definitely. They are.
Yeah. Watch this.
The cats are psyoping us. And you can see it in the way that dogs never get out, and cats never get out of that playfulness of adolescence.
That's true.
Until they get to the point where, really they're so old and you've had them for so long that all they want to do is just lay there and not do anything.
And then they're like, pet me.
At which point you've already, essentially fallen in love with the animal and,
Yeah.
So you let them, but... That playfulness of adolescence, you don't see that in the wild among, feral animals. And the reason why is because they're like, I don't have to look cute. My job is to kill.
Well, I think they're in survival mode, too.
The thing is, they're in survival mode. But domesticated animals do this. And the part of it is because they're like, I still have to look cute.
I don't know if they think about it, though. I think they're just like, hey, I get to still be cute. I still get to hang out and play. And they just do that as long as they can.
The qualities that cause a kitten to look like a kitten as opposed to an older cat, they have started to slow down in dogs and cats as well.
Neotenous because they know traits. That
the cuter the animal is. And it's not that they know it. They're not doing it. They're not doing this shit on purpose. It's we've bred that into them. If this cat can stay as cute as possible forever, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who are shallow enough that they'll kick a dog or cat, out the door as soon as it ages out of
being cute.
That adolescence where they're cute.
The Leonardo DiCaprio of pet owners. That's horrible.
It is.
So, do you suppose horses do that?
Yes and no. It's not so much that they psyop us. But they learn from us more than we want them to learn. So, again, I was going to college. I was also interning with this guy. We were training horses. And I could only train for about 3 hours a day because I got college. I got other stuff I got to do because I was in charge of getting this horse trained up enough that he could sell it.
Yeah.
That was my project, essentially. My PhD thesis in cowboy. Well, the nice thing about a horse, unlike humans, you can psyop humans easier because humans, people are stupid. Horses, on the other hand, you can beat them. So, but we had gotten to the point where there was nothing else I could do, and he found somebody that wanted to buy the horse.
Okay.
And I came by one day when she was riding him. And he called me over. He says, "Man, you didn't do a very good job on that horse." I said, "What do you mean? Look at the horse. It's performing pretty well." He said, "Well, she took him out there and rode him, you know, in the arena for about 3 hours, you know, and it was great. And then at that 3 hour mark, the horse just quit and wouldn't do anything else. And she had to really get on him with the, you know, in order for him to start working again." I was like,
because you had only trained him for 3 hours. Yeah.
The college that I went to was right across the highway from Fort Hood, Fort Cavazos, whatever.
To me, it will always be Fort the Hood. Just the Hood.
Well, yeah, but you know, John Bell Hood was a good soldier, too. You know, the guy bled for Texas before the Civil War.
Yeah.
He actually took an arrow. You can hear the bugle calls over there, the loudspeakers.
Okay, yeah.
At the school.
Okay.
And horses could definitely hear that. And yes, they knew, because our classes would end at 11 o'clock or 11:30. But we would go and start putting the horses away at 11 when a bugle called. So I'm riding this horse in the arena, and it gets to be about 11 o'clock, and we start going to the exit. And as soon as he hears that bugle go off, I feel him picking up his steps. So I said, "Hold on." Yank him back. I pulled him back into a stop. And I basically wanted him to go in reverse. I wanted him to get away from that gate. I wanted to train him out of this whole habit. You know, we stop at 11. So I stopped and I started giving him the command to reverse, and he reversed. And did an entire 180 and backed out of the gate. And he basically said, "We can go in forward or reverse, but we're going back to the barn."
In my limited experience with horses, I think that they're a lot smarter than they let on, and they've kind of mastered the art of being intentionally stupid.
Yeah. they are and they aren't. I mean, I could go on forever about horses. One of the biggest things about horses is they have this fear of everything. And I try to explain to people how hard it is to get a horse to even take a saddle, let alone let somebody climb up on him. I'm like, they can smell the fact that you're a meat eater.
Yeah.
And you're asking this animal that's a prey animal.
Yeah.
To accept the predator on its back, the position that most predators need to be in to take them down.
Yeah. Right.
And oh, by the way, we're going to throw the carcass of another dead animal on top of you.
Yeah.
To make it more comfortable for me to get up there. And we're expecting this horse to do that in a peaceful way. I can do that, but it usually takes about 2 days, 3 days at the most, because you don't want to rush it too much.
Yeah.
And that's after I've worked him a couple of days on the ground before I even start putting the saddle blanket up and taking it off. And then putting the saddle on and then taking it off. And then cinching up the saddle and then letting it go. All those steps, we need to get to the point where they're not bugging out. And then when I get to the point where, say, I'm putting the saddle on and taking it off and he's not freaking out, then I have to take everything off and let him go for a little bit to let him think about that. Because you have to realize that every time you introduce something new to a horse, you're traumatizing that horse. And so, like, if you were driving a car and all of a sudden you had a flat tire and you lost control for a second, but you gained control again, and you pull over to the side, your heart's thumping, your mind is racing and everything else, but you just learned, okay, that's what I do if this happens again.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do with a horse. If you did that...
So you introduce them to frightening situations,
you introduce them to a frightening situation, and you basically let them know, I'm not going to die. And oh, by the way, it's not a bad thing if I don't freak out, because then I'm left alone. Horses, their goal in life is basically to be left alone. not alone, you know, because they want to have other horses around them for security purposes. But even then, you know, herd mentality is way different than a pack mentality. Humans are pack animals. We form bonds. We form families within, you know, a community. A herd is a business partnership. Watch out while I eat. I'll watch out while you eat.
Okay, that's yeah.
There's nothing more. You know, I don't care if every horse in there is a family member to the other horses. They really don't care. And you'll see it because they're like, you know, I joke about beating horses, but honestly, you can't hit a horse as hard as they kick each other. And they,
or as hard as they can kick you.
They will kick each other with the force it would, with enough force to kill a human.
Yeah.
And that's just to tell them, hey, you're bugging me. Get away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you say be left alone, I think they just want to be allowed to eat grass, drink water. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just. No, that's fair. That's totally fair. Yeah. So I thought we were going to talk mostly about blowing stuff up. But yeah, well, this is interesting, I mean, too. But, you know,
and in the
all
context,
fascinating stuff.
And in the context of having a job while being in music, one of the things I like about this job right now is that there are times while I'm driving, you know, when I'm getting loaded or when I'm waiting at the crusher to dump.
The truck is getting loaded, not you.
Yeah,
okay.
The truck is getting loaded.
You get loaded after your gig, maybe.
Or before. Or during. Yeah.
That doesn't affect your performance.
I think about music a lot. I'm a songwriter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if something hits me, I want to be able to start writing something down right then. And
yeah,
at least when I'm hauling, I have a moment where I can stop and go, okay, now what was that idea? I got this idea now. Because, you know, I've had songs before that, you know, that I haven't quite finished. And I'll be laying down in bed, and all of a sudden that line that I need to perfect that song will hit me. And I can't get out of bed. Because I know that if I do, it's going to be another hour and a half before I can get to bed again.
Yeah.
If I can get to bed, you know.
Music will mess up your sleep more than it messes up work. Like
a
musical idea, inspiration.
Exactly.
Doesn't mess up work, but it does mess up sleep.
Yeah. And I've had other jobs. Like, for instance, you know, I was working as a machinist. And I was working at night. And I just happened to be driving home one night, and I misheard lyrics on the radio. And it turned into one of my favorite songs I've written. It's called Wish You Were Here. Not that one, but the song I've wrote was I'm in Hell, Wish You Were Here. Ready?
Yes, I want.
I went down to the Legion Hall. I was gonna have myself a ball. I ran into a friend of yours. Said you finally found your soulmate. He was handsome and rich, and you were doing great. You were wanting to dance in some moves. Well, I'm in hell. Well over a year, walked out on me, called his ass. They found someone new, and you're in paradise. I'm in hell. Wish you were here. Said things have been looking up for me these days. I got a big promotion, a hefty raise. Now I'm beating the women back with a stick.
Bet you are.
Truth is, I got fired for coming in late. Now I'm doing tip jobs for minimum wage. If you're gonna lie, might as well go big. Well, I'm in hell. Wish you were here. Ain't had a sober day or a good night's sleep. Well, over a year. Walked out on me, called his ass the Yeah, that's the song.
All right.
And I wrote that all in about a half an hour, so while at work.
So, you know, work is good for something, right?
Yeah. You know, I was working at a machine where we've got this huge window that looks into the machine as it's making the part. And I'm writing the lyrics on this window with a magic marker so that I can do the job, but I'm also like, because the lyrics are coming to me like that.
Wow. I was going to say, are you old school and you write stuff down? Some people, you know, back in the day, they'd have a little recorder. Now you can record on your phone. And
I write. I
physically write it.
Okay.
Yeah. Supposedly that's a way to treat PTSD, is to, you know, write things out instead of, there's something about the mental process.
Well, I might suffer PTSD from the way the Army treated me, but definitely not from, you know, combat.
Yeah, moral injury.
I've got lots of things that probably have caused me PTSD in my life. The military ain't one of them.
First 18 years.
That just caused other issues. That's just the reason for my anger management. That's all.
But no,
I still have a nervous tick from holding the flashlight for my dad. Oh, you know.
Well, do you find, too, that whether you write it down or record it, the easier it becomes to remember ideas? Like, you kind of develop a part of your brain that basically this is the space where song ideas goes.
I'm the worst person to ask that question, okay, because I have a terrible memory to begin with.
Okay.
However, having said that, you know, when I'm writing a song, I'm constantly going back and forth over lines I've written.
Uh-huh.
Both to maintain the rhythm and kind of like, you know, I'm trying to build that chord progression in my head as I'm doing it.
Okay.
But also because I'm not ripping bong hits and then, you know, writing shit off the top of my head.
Yeah.
These songs are supposed to have a point. Some of them even tell a story.
Yeah. It's a different process for sure.
So, you know, this isn't a stream of consciousness kind of thing for me. I want there to be some congruence, some cohesiveness to that whole song that I'm writing. So as I'm going back and forth over it, I may say, wait a minute, let me move that down. Let me put this up here. I forget a lot. However, I do go over stuff continuously as I'm writing it for those reasons. I want to remember the cadence of the song. The rhythm. I'm starting to figure out what that chord progression is. You know, like when we were writing that song together,
Broken Tokyo. Yeah.
I was already telling you, I already got the chord progression. I already know how the song's going to sound.
Well, as a bass player, you're going to think in chord progressions, I'm guessing, because I mean, I started out as a singer, so I'm going to think of the melody.
Well, I'm thinking of a melody as well. I'm not worried about writing the melody per se.
No.
I'm writing out the chord progressions so that when I go up to play it, I know what I'm going to play on guitar, and then I can show the lead singer, okay, this is how the song is going to be sung, and he's going to work on the melody. I'm not going to write the melody out because this is how I'm going to sing it, but somebody else may sing it totally different.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting how people focus on different things depending on where they start out. Yeah.
I'm a rhythm guy, so I think in chords.
That makes sense. Totally. This almost concludes our chat, but true to form, after I stopped recording, Curtis started telling even more interesting stories. So between the two cuts, I'm just going to splice in a song of my own that was inspired by the open mic where I met Curtis. So to be clear, Curtis is not the guy in this song. Where the life of Curtis Crawdad Brayfield could be put into a country song, this guy is more of a rock and roll train wreck.
Well, the only sex he gets is listening to his ex tell him F you. So I would not dream that he even expects any respect from a guy like you. is aware that he's a loser, and that the beggar can't be choosers. He's kinda like a moral traffic sign. Folks don't travel any further on down his line, 'cause they just might end up sleeping on the street next to him. He's been advised to keep it clean cut, but can't play one set without getting lit and pinching some girl's butt. Oh, but he was sure something in his day, till something made him fade into a drunken delta haze. Well, he don't care that he's a loser, another beggar can't be chooser. He's like a moral traffic sign. Folks don't travel any further on down his line, 'cause they just might end up sleeping on the street next to him. Hey, we don't all get to be winners. All I really want is to get richer or thinner, but we'll be the same dumb schmucks as the day we were born, on the day that we died. I'm ever gonna make it. All I really know is I just couldn't take it if I got to see my dreams but lost the love of my life. These are the kind of things that make me think twice. Alright, so I'm about to go on next and play my little set after old train wreck. Oh, but he's been kicked out of much better bands than I'll ever have a chance at, and that's a fact I'm inclined to respect. So pay no mind that he's a loser, 'cause ambition is a bruiser. And there are all kind of demons and every ill, and all train wrecks got left are the cheap thrills. I'm gonna laugh my ass off when that girl comes back, an old train wreck tries to cop another feel. Just take it easy, train wreck, 'cause really this ain't no big deal.
Say that again.
Well, there's another job that I had. I was actually working in a call center, and our job was to try and sell Medicaid Part D to retirees.
There's a Part D.
Part D is the drug coverage, okay. Right?
D for drugs. I mean, because, I mean, there's and A, so there's B. What's C? I mean, how many parts does Medicare have?
You know what? I don't know if there is a C, but...
I skipped straight to
I'm not that old. I'm not worried about it, but...
C for crotchety, you know.
In talking with these people about Medicaid and everything, they're like, well, I take metformin for my, you know, blah, 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 and I take this for that and, you know, and all this stuff. And so while I was sitting there,
does
I
Medicare
wrote a...
Does Medicare cover Viagra? Just asking.
Well, I started writing a song called I Take Hank for My Heart. And
you need to finish that song.
Yeah, I'm not like in love with the thing. It's definitely going to be a side B. But yeah, I wrote a song called Hank for My Heart because I was listening to all these old people telling me all the prescription drugs that they take. I've also been a truck driver for a while. In fact, I've even ridden on a freight train. I've done a lot of the jobs that they sing about in country music. The only thing I haven't done is gone to prison. Yet.
Yeah. You've got an ex. You've got, let's see. Anybody listening, this guy's available. Should I edit that out? I don't know. But anyway. But
I'm single and ready to mingle.
Quick announcement. The Music Association of Central Texas has put out a call to artists and any creative vendors to be part of their annual fall festival. So if you're catching this post anytime before the end of October 2023, contact MACT or Texas Fine Arts for details. And if you're catching this post after the deadline, just remember that this is an annual event and it just keeps getting better every year. And as always, this is Sarah Seven wishing peace be with y'all.